Well, good morning. I don't know if you have an outline or not. I forgot to bring the outline, so I made some copies of mine. It's got some scribbling all over it, and got my grandkids pass it out, so 2 years and 4 years old. I'm not sure if they're all wadded up in one seat or where they're at. So they do a good job. Do that every week. Okay, what does it say first?
Read text.
Okay. Giving y'all all of my secrets here, how I don't get lost. Although, I looked through our verses today very carefully, and there's no mention of any unnamed Pharisees, no mention of Simons or Peters or anything like that, so maybe I won't do what I did last week. I'm not sure how that occurred, but it did. I'm glad I caught it, because there had been about half y'all had me cornered after church telling me about it. Verse 43, chapter 6 of the book of Luke. Luke 6, 43 through 49. Text says, "For a good man does not bear bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. For every tree is known by its own fruit. For men do not gather figs from thorns, nor do they gather grapes from a bramble bush. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil. For out of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaks. But why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Whoso comes to me and hears my sayings and does them, I will show you whom he is like. He is like a man building a house who dug deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose and the stream beat vehemently against that house, it could not shake it, for it was founded on the rock. But he who heard and did nothing like a man, but let me read it again. But he who heard and did nothing is like a man who built a house on the earth without a foundation, against which the stream beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great." So we've got two different scenarios here to finish up chapter 6 before we go on. And I've entitled the message, "Betrayed or Affirmed?" And you can see the points there, betrayed or affirmed, first of all, by your heart. We see that in verses 43 to 45. Now, I want you to notice how this is worded. He says, "A good tree does not bear bad fruit." Now, let's clarify something, or at least in my mind, I think that this is correct. I don't think this is talking about bad fruit as in the fruit is diseased. I think it's talking about bad fruit as in it's bad fruit you wouldn't ordinarily eat. It may be a poison berry or whatever. But it's not just that the tree is sick that made it a bad tree. It's bad because it's bad through and through. Even if it's in its healthiest days, it's still considered a bad tree because it's not good, something to be considered good to eat its fruit anytime. Okay, so don't think along the lines of black rot or disease or all that kind of stuff, all right? So he makes a statement, very first phrase, "For a good tree does not bear bad fruit." How many instances of finding bad fruit on this tree would qualify for that statement to be untrue? Once. "A good tree does not bear bad fruit." It doesn't say a good tree, for the most part, does not bear bad fruit. It just makes a statement. A good tree does not bear bad fruit. So if that tree bore bad fruit one time, it makes this statement untrue. Everybody following me? Okay, it's a universal, exclusive, all-inclusive statement that a good tree will not bear bad fruit. Ever. Okay? Then the second state. Nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Same thing, it's a negative statement. A bad tree, a tree that's fruit is poisonous and bad for you, will never bear good fruit. Okay, now that's the analogy with the fruit. All right, he says the next sentence there, for every tree is known by its own fruit. Apple trees are known for apples. All right? And we don't have to talk about fruit necessarily to know what a tree is known for. All right? I saw on my sawmill several different kinds of wood. And I saw some, I think it's called, is that called dunnage? Four befores that the forklift goes under? I saw some dunnage for a trucking firm here that they want oak. They don't want redbud. They don't want pine. They don't want anything but oak. It doesn't have to be pretty. They put them across a flatbed semi and used for, to get a forklift under your load, etc. Don't have to be pretty. They don't have to be grade cabinet grade material, but they do have to be oak. Now, why is that? It's because oak is hard. It will take the abuse of things being put on it and shuffled and scooted around and banged around, and that's what they want. So the characteristic of that wood comes into play, and you can count on every time you cut an oak log open seeing the same quality, not quality as in rot-free and all that, but the same hardness, the same type of wood is there. It's known by its wood. Just like a tree is known by its fruit. These trees, he tells us here in this verse as well. Let's look, keep reading here for verse 44. Every tree is known by its own fruit. Men do not gather figs from thorns. The person is wanting to go pick some figs, they don't go to the thorn bush. A person is wanting to pick some blackberries, they don't go, you know, to some scrubby weed growing in the garden and say, well, maybe there's some blackberries here. No. You go there for a particular reason, looking for a particular thing, and you go for the item, for the tree or the bush, that you know that's where it belongs because of the nature of that bush or that tree. He says in verse 44, men do not gather figs from thorns, nor do they gather grapes from a bramble bush. Then he makes a comparison. And here's where it causes us much consternation with this analogy and the next one as well. He says, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good. Now, the good man, you can't escape the idea that the good man is compared to what? The good tree, right? The good man is prepared or compared to the good tree. Mike, would you help her out there kind of catch on? A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good. That which is good. Now, what is a good man? Have you ever heard the statement, that guy's a good guy? I've heard it all the time. I use it frequently. This person is a good person. This is a good man. What do we mean when we say that? Do we mean that they are good just like Jesus Christ was good? We mean they're good compared to what they could be. They may be good compared to their neighbor. They may be good compared to their brother. They may be good compared to what they used to be. They're good, comparatively speaking, to other people around them that we would classify, not classify as good. Right? Perhaps that's how Jesus is using the word good here. I really don't think so. You can read the parallel passage of this in Matthew chapter 7, and it's a little stronger that he's talking about a goodness that goes much deeper than that. Perhaps he's talking about a hypothetical man, that this is really not intended to tell us anything about man as a whole. It's just a hypothetical statement that's saying that just like good trees bring forth good fruit, good men bring forth good treasure from their heart as well. But he doesn't have anybody in mind. He's not talking too deeply about anything other than just that surface analogy. But I doubt it. I think he means something much more than that. Now, we know if we're looking at, if you've been around here for very many years and heard John and me preach, that when we talk about the goodness of man, we have a hard time finding it. That man by nature, Romans tells us, there are no men good. There is none good. There is none that doeth good. So you've got that concept and that idea to deal with as well. I've got a question there. Laura, you and Denise are librarians, so maybe y'all can answer this for me. Where would you go in the library to find a list of all the good men and good women in the world? You would look under the section of fiction. That's my joke for this decade. So, you know, make sure you laugh. How do you know if a person is good? Do they wear it? They have a card, like an ID card, that tells you they're good? No. Do you know it 30 minutes after you meet them? Sometimes you think you do, right? Sometimes you get this idea, this seems like a good person. All right, but for the most part, it takes a while. It takes maybe a few months or a few years of someone earning that badge that you may tag them with. You can eliminate them faster than you can name them. That's a good point, Kathy. All right? The text says, at the end of verse 45, "For out of the abundance of a man's heart, he speaks." Now, when we just so happen that we're caught where we say something without thinking, we blurt something out, because we don't have time to control our tongue necessarily, then it's possible, just possible, that what comes out our mouth is what is really in our heart. All right? Let me give you a couple of examples of that. When I was a senior in high school, I was in Spanish class. Uno, dos, tres. Right? All right. In Spanish class, and the teacher was good man. See? Good man. But some of the time we would get through with our work 5 minutes early or 10 minutes early, and we was in this little portable building that was totally separated from the rest of the structures. And we were there, and we had a hard time kind of hearing the bell, so he usually kind of stopped like 4 or 5 minutes early where we could hear the bell to know to go change classes. Well, during that 4 or 5 minutes, people kind of quietly just began to, they're supposed to be studying, but they kind of quietly just begin to talk. And one day I was sitting there and I was in the desk and could straddle my feet over the desk where I had my feet on each side of it of the seat. And I was rocking back and forth on the back legs of that desk. And just talking to my friends or whoever, you know, just there like everybody else was, except nobody else was rocking except me. And all of a sudden, I got a little off balance and was fixing to flip over backwards. Well, I had my feet in a good position to catch myself, but out my mouth spewed something vulgar, loudly. The class got instantly quiet. Now, why did that come out my mouth? Was it just one of those rare things that, you know, instead of saying banana nut bread, I said what I said? I don't think so. It's because what was in my heart was betraying me. At that age in my life, I was pretty much a, what is it, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, or the other way around. Those two guys. I was taught to be respectful, and I could be respectful. I was taught not to use foul language, and I could not use foul language. I mean, I ain't saying, you understand what I'm saying? I could use clean language. Let me say it that way. I could speak respectfully. I could speak without cursing around my dad. Okay? At home, at church, we went to church. I went to church every Sunday. There wasn't any choice about it. I never asked my daddy if I could stay home or I didn't want to go. No. I knew I was going. I went to church, sat in the Sunday school class with the other, whatever we were, and there and knew all the answers to all the questions. I knew all the Bible stories. I knew this. I knew that. I could be and portray myself as a Christian. That's on Sunday. On Monday, at school, I was a different person. I was vulgar, not vulgar as I could be, but vulgar enough I wouldn't have wanted my dad to show up. All right? I was vulgar. Used foul language. So what was I? Okay? When I'm a nice guy and just suddenly out of the blue, I about fall over in my chair and I blurt out this word, does that tell you something about me? Okay? Before you answer, let me just do it the other way. Suppose I'm typically vulgar and every once in a while I'll help little old ladies across the street. I'm a nice guy. Which one exposes my heart? Both. Right? I might can sometimes, even most of the time, act like a good guy. But those bad times that show themselves up portray me as a vulgar person. Even though they might be in the minority, they reveal to you, without you having to do a whole big study on it, they reveal to you what's inside. Okay, I can be typically a bad person. You know, I might can talk it real nice in the Sunday school class, but in the gym, what do they call that locker room talk that Donald Trump was supposedly engaged in? Locker room talk or Sunday school Bible quiz answers. Which one tells you my heart? It's the locker room talk. Why is that? Because that's the way it is. Because deep in my heart, if my heart was a good heart, those locker room talk wouldn't be in there, would it? It wouldn't be something that I would occasionally participate in. Because my heart would refuse to let me go there, to let me be that. It's a tall order. It's a tall order. That's why I say this is much to our consternation. We read this. because we're without trying to, we are forced to examine our own heart. How do I know my heart is a good heart? There, we're not going to get into the theology of this per se, but it's like we said just a few minutes ago, there is no such thing as a good heart. And God changes the heart of stone. God changes the heart of evil. And why God doesn't make us like supposedly the Nazarenes are and put us into sinless perfection immediately, I don't know. But he doesn't. We struggle with the flesh that remains. Or I do. I was looking at some of y'all. I think y'all do too. All right? So, we are either betrayed by our own evil heart that we, for the most part, can hide. Or we attempt to hide. We attempt to show our good side. Or our heart, to some extent, affirms that it is good or that it is bad, either one. So, let's go on. Number two, betrayed or affirmed by our foundation. Now here he compares two things. He compares a foundation that is on a rock, a house that is built with the foundation on a rock. He's comparing that to a house that is built, who has no foundation. It's just built on the sand, on the dirt. And that's the things that he's comparing. Years ago, when I was a kid, we moved up here from southeast Arkansas. And before, about the time I was 5 years old to 10 years old, I guess, people started using backhoes. All right, the backhoes were around long before that, but southeast Arkansas, where there's no rock and it's just all sandy soil, they dug their footings with a shovel. And wasn't that big a deal. They'd always done it that way. That's the way they did it. So that's all I knew. We came up here and saw a backhoe. I think there was one guy, John Walker, older man, had a backhoe. I think he was the only guy, perhaps, or the first one that had a backhoe around Heber Springs. And they dug footings with those things. And I can remember my dad began to work for himself building houses, and I remember the question he had to answer. Do I pay the extra money to get a backhoe man to dig this footing, or do we do the way we've always done and dig it by hand? Well, it didn't take long of digging in the soil around here till he figured out the cheapest way and the quickest way and the best way was to get a backhoe to dig the footing for us. Years later, after that, Daniel and I were building a house over at Higdon, and there was a man close by there that built a few houses, rent houses and stuff. And I saw him, and he was an old guy, I mean, fairly old. And out there with a young, looked like teenage boy, digging a footing for a duplex. And they had that footing dug in, I don't know, an hour or two, it seemed like. It was one afternoon. And went home, and I had kind of looked over there a time or two. And I thought to myself, after work, I'm going to drive over there and just see what that looks like. So I did. And the footing was maybe two shovel widths wide and about that deep. And I thought to myself, yeah, that explains a lot. Well, he pours concrete in that, and that's his footing. That's the foundation for his house. Now, those are the things that Jesus is comparing. He's comparing a house that has a strong foundation put in correctly, and he's comparing that to a house that has a weak foundation, no foundation hardly at all. Now, What difference does it make in this analogy which one of those kinds of foundations that it has? The difference is how long it's going to last. The difference is whether or not cracks are going to start showing up in your sheetrock or in your brick or wherever. The difference is in the effects that it will have on the house. In the parable, what does the floods represent? What do the winds represent? What does the rain represent? Okay, it doesn't represent the final judgment of God. It represents the things that can go on in our lives right now. The troubles that can come upon us, the tragedies that strike us, the hardships that we carry, the grief that we bear. It stands for all of those things. So here we are comparing these two foundations, and whether or not they stand or fall depends upon the storms that hit them, if they're prepared to hit the storms, for the storms to hit them. All right, so in the analogy, going back to the man, notice what he says in verse 46. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Now, in Matthew's account, he goes a little deeper than that, adds a little more to it. He says, you call me Lord, Lord, and he said, I don't know you. But you say, did we not do this? Did we not do that? All right, those things are found in the book of Matthew. He says, the person who hears my words and does them. It's like the man who built his house on a good foundation. The person who hears my words but doesn't do them, they're not a part of his life. He's like the person who built the house upon the sand. So here we've got two kinds of foundations. And the difference in the two, spiritually speaking, is whether or not we hear God and we do what He says. It's a matter of obedience. Now, we need to let that sink in a little bit. The fact that your life will be in some ways determined by your obedience to God. That the foundation of your life is such that it will be affected by your obedience to God. There are two things here, and I've got them listed here. Last two type lines. A pattern of trust, a pattern of faith, and a pattern of obedience to God builds a sound foundation that will stand. If the pattern of your life is to trust in God, if the pattern of your life is to believe in God, the pattern of your life is to obey God, and to you are given, and it's a priority in your life, to make His Word, apply it to your life, and order your steps by it, then generally speaking, your life will not be free of storms. That's not the point. The point is how the storms affect you. How you are able to stand in the storms. Your life. That's the house. The second thing is not only trust and faith and obedience, but it's a proper understanding of Bible teaching. Of the Scriptures. Most of you, or some of you at least, remember 12 years ago when tornado came through and killed Susan's dad. I had always dreaded when the day would come when, if her dad died before we did, she did. I didn't. Know how it would affect her. Her daddy called her every morning. She loved her dad. But what I saw was the effects, and I had this thought during that time. What I saw in her was the effects of a foundation of believing in a sovereign God. Her ship might have been battered, but it was not destroyed. It seemed to me during that time that her spiritual life flourished. She didn't hide in the closet for 6 months or a year. She went on. I have a couple of friends. One of them they both were kind of in the prosperity movement type mentality and theology. And this one guy's mother got cancer. And I was talking to me, he told me he's claiming that she will be healed. He's claiming that the casting out the demons and the sickness and all these kinds of things that were a curse to her. And I knew where he was coming from because I knew enough about that kind of mentality. And he made all these positive statements, yet his mother died. What does that do to a person who is clinging to those type things? It's hard. It's hard to believe if I can do this and I can say this, that God's going to be moved, God's going to do this, and then God doesn't come through. His life was torn apart. Now, he survived, he came through it. But just the thought that he had to struggle with all of these things that he apparently had to have been looking at wrong. Had another friend who's kind of in the same mindset. His dad was on the verge of dying. And me and him were talking one day, a week or so before his dad died. He said, "I know, one thing we know, it's not God's will for my dad to die." And he said, "One thing we know." I'm not sure who the we was, but it wasn't including me, because I didn't know that. He said, "We know that it's not God's will for my dad to die, but yet his dad died." You have to come to grips with stuff like that when your foundation is built upon these type of flimsy things. Jesus is telling us the foundation that you need to lay, that you need to have for your home, for your life, is one that is dug deep into the rock of solid teaching, solid understanding about God, about Jesus, about all of his attributes and characteristics. You're not going to get that if you don't put out some effort to learn. We could come here every Sunday morning, and if this is all you get, you're going to be a while getting it all. You need more than from 11 o'clock to 12 o'clock. You need some on Monday or Tuesday or Thursday or Friday or something. You need something that is solid, something that is right. And your heart needs to be given. You need to be hungry for it. I need to be hungry for it. I need to see my need for that, to realize this is what God has given me to sustain me. When the wind is blowing and the storms are raging, that's a tough time to get your Bible and just knock the dust off of it a little bit and decide to study a little bit. Some of that stuff needs to be already deep into your soul beforehand. So, here we are again. This text, this idea of the foundations causes us, without wanting to perhaps, to examine our own selves and to see what kind of foundation is it that I have been basing my life upon. Okay, we're not through. We've got 20 more chapters or whatever it is in the book of Luke. We're going to see hard sayings of Jesus over and over and over again. I hope that we, all of us, will take to heart the need to soak this book up, to listen to what Jesus is saying, and pray and ask God to make it parts of our lives. Let's pray.